Good evening, everybody. James McCanny here with my Science Hour for February 15th, 2024. And tonight I'm going to be talking about some electrical conditions in outer space, something I'm sure you're all interested in. But first, I've just got to talk about some of these issues that have happened in the past week. Of course, the Tucker Carlson interview with Vladimir Putin. I want to give some perspective there. And also the Super Bowl. Oh, jeez. Oh, my goodness. Who picks the halftime show? I mean, was anybody entertained? I watched the game and I thought, well, maybe this will change. Maybe this is an introduction. But my goodness. It was not entertaining. It wasn't fun to watch. It was not. I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was. And you go back to previous halftime shows. At least there was some music. There was some. Anyway, who on earth decides and puts together the Super Bowl halftime show that should be representative of the United States in some minor form or fashion? Good grief. But what I really want to talk about now, a number of weeks ago, I was talking about college football and the possibility more at the college level of fixed games. Because, and the reason being is that the college students are, that's not their end game. National title is great and everything, but that's not the end game. They're not making any money. Some of these people are vying for a contract, like 4 years, $80 million. These are the kind of contracts that are going out to the high-end players. But even, linemen, people like that, they're making big bucks. So the whole, the reason for playing college football is to get into the pros, where you're going to make the big money, which sets the stage for all kinds of under the table things going on, especially when it comes to betting. And college football has a serious amount of betting going on. Some of the big games in some of the big schools, like say Michigan or Ohio State and other ones that have serious amounts of betting going on. But okay, I want to talk about the Super Bowl. And really, I once coached football for some kids. I was an assistant coach, so they asked me, they couldn't have the football program without an assistant, so I volunteered, and these kids did very well. And I realized, I have this minor amount of coaching talent. And I also coached some soccer, which I really didn't know anything about. I actually went to a class to learn how to coach soccer to help. The same situation where they needed an assistant coach and they couldn't have the program unless they had one. So I volunteered for a year or two. I don't remember how long, but and also was successful. So I've seen that. I played football in high school, grade school, a little bit in high school, and I could have gone to college playing in some minor school. I was the field goal kicker. And other than that, I played line because I was a little bit bigger than some of the other kids in high school. Not anymore. But and of course, watched football for my entire life, being an American kid. Remember the Green Bay Packers against the Baltimore Colts back in in the 60s. So, I've been around watching football, evolve through the ages up to what it is now. Okay, so, being a good armchair quarterback, I thought I'd throw in some commentary on the Super Bowl, as we called it in when we were kids, the Stupid Bowl. But anyway, here's the situation, and when you see these things, it's kind of like, what's going on here? Okay, so Kansas City has the ball, they're on the goal line, and it's like, something short yardage and goal, and they're on third down, so they got to make a touchdown or potentially kick a field goal because they're just not getting the ball in the The defenses in this game were horrendously good. Just unbelievably good defenses, as was, you know, the number of sacks, the number of pressures, the number of stopped runs, etc. It was a tough game to be in the offense because the defenses were just so dominating. But at any rate, okay, so here's Kansas City on the a few yards to go for a touchdown. It's in during the regular game. And I think it's before their first field goal. So anyway, it's third and goal, and they put in a play, a run around end, and it's just the back taking the ball with no lead blockers or anything, and by five guys tackle this guy, the guy running with the ball. He has no chance. One of those defenders would have tackled him for sure, because these tacklers are not missing tackles. There's no missed tackles in this game. There's gang tackling, where five guys tackle the back or whatever. I mean, it's punishing. And so the question is, these teams have to have a play when they're in that situation. It's a go-to play that it's going to 100% of the time, 200% of the time, is going to make a touchdown. And there are plays like that, that it's like it's a fake run, two backs, and maybe a tight end going into this one area, and there's a designated receiver who's probably got at least two blockers out in front of him and a long way to, you know, on the wide side of the field, so there's a long way to the end zone. So at any rate, what do they call? They call a run around end with no pulling guards, nothing to lead this. And, of course, the guy gets tackled, and Kansas City kicks their field goal, gets 3 points. But after that play, the point is, this guy, what's his name, Kelsey, I forget his name, he's a tight end, I think he's number 87 or 84, 87 for Kansas City. Big guy, bald head, black beard, looks like a monster, you know, and he's the tight end. And he comes off the field, and he goes up to Andy Reid as the coach of Kansas City, and he gets in his face. I mean, he's screaming at him, and Andy, is it Andy Reid, the head coach for Kansas City, has got his head down, he's shirked down, he's just looking down, he won't even look at the guy. And the guy, I know what's saying, he's the tight end. He would have been the guy on the receiving end of the pass that should have made the touchdown, or at least be a blocker or something. And I'm sure they practiced probably a full day of practice on that play. And the question is, why didn't they call it? And this guy comes off the field and just screams into the face of the head coach. What are you doing? Calling this end run that had maybe on a good day 30% chance of success, on that day zero chance of success. That a lone back running around the left end was going to make a 4-yard gain. No, against the defense that had been shutting them down all day. Wow. So anyway, now we turn off later into the game, and this is in overtime now. They tie and by the way, it's interesting to see that San Francisco would have won the game already if it were not for a missed field goal. A missed extra point. So anyway, whatever. The game ends up at a tie. And also I wanted to mention that when San Francisco made their, I think it was their first touchdown, and it was like a little flea flicker, throw it over to this guy. This guy throws it back across the field. And the guy takes it, and he runs straight into the end zone for a touchdown, maybe 10, 15 yards. But there was a clear holding on that play. These backs or these blockers were already out there, so it had to be like a tight end and another back doing these blocks. There were two defenders out there, and there was a clear hold on one of those guys. I mean, a bad hold where he just held the guy because he had to maintain this block while this guy ran through the big hole out there and into the end zone. But a clear holding call that the referees had to have seen. I mean, I saw it. Everybody else saw it. But didn't call it. to let that touchdown go through. Okay, so anyway, that's just another point, but how can a referee be standing there looking at this, excuse me, and not notice that there was a major holding going on? Okay, but the point I wanted to get back to this short yardage and goal to go type of situation, you were in overtime. San Francisco is the first one to get the ball. They come down, they get down to the goal line. They're third and goal, and they too should have had a play guaranteed 100% touchdown from that situation, where they should have pulled it out of the bag and done that, and pulled that play out and ran it. It was probably something that both teams practiced probably a whole day on that play. And the reason I happen to know about this, because when I coached myself, I had plays like that. This was a play that there was a certain situation that you had to do something different. And the other team, the defense, was used to some situation, and you had set it up just like a prize fighter in a fight or anything else. You set it up, you set it up, you set it up, and then you do that same thing, but something else happens. And so the defense is reacting just like they had always reacted, but something else happens that they're not expecting, and you make the touchdown. Okay, and so anyways, here's San Francisco. They're on the short yardage and goal. They got to score. They got to make some kind of score here. And so what do? They call the same play. Black back, gets the ball, runs around the end, no blockers, and gets tackled. So they have to kick a field goal. And when I saw the players for San Francisco walking off the field afterwards, I could see it in their faces, like that they should have won this game, or at least kept it going, you know, made a tie. And then when Kansas City gets down to the goal line in the overtime, they pull out the play, you know, the end, fading into the background, into the end zone, catches the ball for the touchdown, they win. So the point is why on earth would play callers, which would include the coach, you know, he's talking to the guys upstairs who are calling the plays, why would both teams in critical situations, third and goal, where they got to make the score, they got to do this. I mean, this is imperative. They have a play. They don't use it. They have an end run around the back run around the end where he's got maybe on a good day 30% chance of making it. On this day, probably 2%. Why would they call a 2% probability play in a situation like that when the game's on the line? That's my question. Okay, so enough of that. And then also, who on earth picks the halftime shows? I mean, it's just beyond bizarre. It certainly doesn't represent anybody I know. And maybe they think because the guy who's a black guy, that's cool. Of course, there's a lot of black fans. But I don't know any black people that like that kind of entertainment, if you call it that. Okay, next on the agenda here, talking about Tucker Carlson's interview with Vladimir Putin. And there were some follow-up interviews where he, first of all, he has the interview with Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin. And the very first thing that came out as this was actually going on, they interview Hillary Clinton, and she passes him off as a youthful idiot. But this is the power elite. Hillary Clinton is representative of the, if anybody is, of the power elite that goes all the way up the banking chain. And talk about a useful idiot. Huh, she is the epitome of the useful idiot, her and Billy, who have gained their life prominence because of trashing you, the public. And, you know, anyway, I don't want to go through all of that, but the people in power, the elite, since the Russian Revolution, and before, but primarily the Russian Revolution, where the Rothschilds came into Russia and their goal was disruption, what they're doing to the United States right now. they went into Russia, which was a very successful country under the Tsar. I mean, they had their poverty, but they had the a tremendous amount of agriculture, which in those days meant represented wealth. There was not a lot of industrial power. This is at the very, very beginning of the Industrial Revolution worldwide. So Russia is a fairly wealthy country. They have immense amounts of food under the Tsar. There's a great deal of wealth. They have a great deal of social development, of arts, of music. And so anyway, the bankers come in and they want to get rid of this. They want to control Russia. So they start the fomentation of the in the universities, just like in the United States, and teach the students that they're the proletariat, they use that word, like the working class, and that they should create a revolution where they, you know, the people then are in charge, and that's the goal, you know, the Stalin, the Lenin, and they insert people from out of Russia to go in there and take over from Germany. And so they fund two groups. Two groups are emerging out of this. So they come in and they fund both of them. They fund the Mensheviks, known as the Whites, and for historical reasons, and then the Bolsheviks, which are the Reds. And as this Russian Revolution takes hold and the shooting starts, literally a shooting revolution, and the you know, like the if you see the movie Dr. Zhivago, it takes place during that time. It's a really good movie, gives you the feel, it puts you right there in Russia, you know, 1905 Russian Revolution, Russia. Very good movie that depicts that, Dr. Zhivago. And Boris Pasternak wrote the book, but it's about the Russian Revolution. And of course, a character, a novel, that in the characters in the novel. But it takes place during the Russian Revolution, which it depicts graphically. So anyway, the Rothschild banking empire comes in and funds these groups. And in the end, they choose the Bolsheviks to win the revolution. And so they cut the funding of the Mensheviks, increase the funding and the arms movement to the Bolsheviks. And of course, the Bolsheviks win the revolution. And of course, the people are ecstatic because they have won the revolution, not realizing that the bankers had installed the banks in Russia and then proceeded to dismantle these countries piece by piece, economically, come in, own the resources, and the people end up literally as plebeians, so there's only a small ruling class, and to get something, you have to have an association with the political party. So Russia, as we grew up and knew it through the, you know, the 50s, all the way from the 1900s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. And it was finally Reagan who broke the Soviet Union. And Reagan understood the situation, the Cold War. The Cold War was a fabricated situation where we had to be against the Russians. As a little kid, I was taught in, you know, second, third grade that when the sirens went off, we had to get under our desks because the Russians were going to bomb us in any given moment with nuclear bombs. That's what I was taught as a little kid. So they were fomenting this belief system into the kids at a very young age. So Russia has always been the key to the people in power. As long as you keep that big bear, that big bad bear enemy over there, and that went away for a while with Reagan. And what Reagan did is he started the Star Wars program, and the Russians tried to keep up with us. So they were out gathering eggs and stealing eggs from farmers to try and pay for the resources to keep up with the arms race that Reagan had set, and it nearly broke the United States. But it's kind of like how they cure cancer. They give you chemotherapy, and it supposedly kills off the cancer cells before it kills the patient, and then you bring the patient back. the philosophy of chemotherapy and radiation for cancer. And that was Reagan's tactic for getting rid of breaking Russia financially, which he did. And so that began the era which ushered in Putin, 20 some years ago. And so there was Reagan who initiated all of that. But Russia went through a collapse. And when I personally worked with Russian scientists in the mid 1990s, they were at the University of Novosibirsk, but they would laugh. They would say that, not really laugh, but they would tell me that they were making $75 equivalent a month. That's what their paycheck was from the government, of course. Everything was from the government. And living in a barracks type of situation on campus. They were right off the campus there. And that was the lot of a university professor, which you would imagine, like in the United States, these guys in similar position working at a university are probably making 200 grand a year. If they're tenured, they're there, they're getting grant money or whatever. And they're in the loop, publications, whatever they're doing. A physicist in the United States in a university, probably making 250 grand a year. And so the but the Russian scientists, they're very good, excellent. In fact, I would estimate much better physicists that were in Russia working, atmospheric physicists, much better than the ones that I ran up next to in Cornell, who are a bunch of jerks, arrogant, pompous jerks who didn't know anything and had no clue of what was going on, made 200 to 250,000 a year, maybe more, after you got done with things. And of course, Carl Sagan became a multimillionaire because of his Cosmos series, and he was the epitome of the NASA tier two scientist out there, thumping the party line. Okay, so anyway, back to Russia. It then, the Soviet Union went away, and it was like, okay, so the question that arises is, what is NATO for? Russia is no longer a threat. And so anyway, Putin comes along and builds up and actually rebuilds Russia and builds up its military machine. And primarily as a alternative, because of the balance of power against NATO, because NATO is there, well, Russia had to build up and internally all by itself. And so that was the situation. But it was very important for the United States to fund and pay for NATO, because the real reason is not because of the war, or having a war with Russia, because they have these surrogate wars like in the Ukraine, where we're fighting and they choose a country to destroy. But the real reason was because the United States power elite needed an enemy. And that is Putin. So when Hillary Clinton says that Tucker Carlson is a useful idiot when he's talking to Vladimir Putin, no, Hillary, you're the useful idiot, and the power elite that you represent need Russia, the big bad bear Russia, to maintain your power. That's what's going on. That just summarizes it in a nutshell. That's all you have to say. The rest is history, as they say. And of course, the other issue with Ukraine is the money. This immense amount of money that has been going into Ukraine since the 2014 takeover by the Israeli-controlled U.S. Government. And all of this vast amount of money, which is getting kicked back into politicians' pockets, into corporations, into military corporations, etc. And then, of course, the war that's raging on in Gaza right now. The other thing, that's all of the Israeli weaponry, etc., is all built in the United States. And there was a post interview with Tucker Carlson at the it was the World Governments Forum, and This was an interview that was conducted in front of hundreds of people, representatives of all the countries in the world. And the topic of the war in Gaza, the Israeli back and forth, the Palestinian, everything that's going on over there. And the question came up, well, what's going on with the United States at the United Nations? When the ceasefire proposal came up, the United States vetoed it. In other words, we want the shooting to continue as the official United States, political position on what's going on in Gaza. How insane. And everybody's realizing this. I mean, and Tucker Carlson gives an example. He says he comes home as the father figure, and a couple of the kids are fighting. And instead of saying, okay, the very first thing you do is you stop the fighting, and no matter who's in fault, who started it, or whatever, you stop it, and then you say, okay, now we're going to sort this out. But you don't come home as a father and say, okay, well, hey, you're bigger, you beat the crap out of the little brother. No, that's not what you do as a father figure. And the United States, being the most powerful country in the world, and that militarily, economically, etc., should be the first one in the door saying, hey, stop the shooting. We're going to stop this right now. In the same way with Ukraine. And instead, in Ukraine also, they're funding it. They're pouring billions of dollars in just raw cash and in equipment into Ukraine to, just let's throw as much gasoline on this fire as we can. It's absolutely, and these are two situations which the U.S. should be the first one in the door to have a ceasefire, stop this. We're going to sort this out and see, you make your complaint, you make your complaint, and but you got to stop the shooting. This is not okay. But instead, the United States is pouring money, unbridled amounts of money, into both of these and military equipment. So the world is realizing that the United States is the problem here. But you can't talk about this. And that was one of the other points of Tucker Carlson, is that the media is locked in with this funding and the everything that's going on. And to say something in the United States is almost against the law, like you're against us, you're not a patriot, or whatever. But there are a lot of forces moving right now in the United States, and the biggest one is to destroy the family, Christian families. I don't care if you're white or black or Mexican or, illegal alien, or I don't care who you are in the United States. The forces at work are to destroy the middle class and to destroy Christians. It's just blatant. And so and families, these are the targets. And it's being done through education. It's being done through the everything from kindergarten all the way up to university level, in the school systems, in the media, in the music world, in Hollywood. And pick anything, and it's being targeted and destroyed. The division, and this is the reason I'm bringing this up, is because this is the Rothschilds' plan. It's called communism, and a lot of people associate communism with Russia or with Lenin or Stalin, or the dictatorships like Hitler or Mussolini or whatever. But the fact is that it is a clear and present danger in the United States right now. What they did in Russia in the early 1900s with the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks, they are following the Communist Manifesto in the United States. Divide, divide, divide. You divide people who want police with those who don't, blacks against whites, kids against parents. Transgenders against non-transgenders, women's sports against non-women's sports, you name it. It's being divided to the where it's just so fragmented that you cannot have a single political party, and then throw in things like COVID. Something is coming in May. I don't know what it is. I don't know. I think it's going to be multiple things in May, in the United States that is going to be, it's going to change the economic system, probably the banking system. I believe that part of it will be an attack, some kind of hacking attack, alleged, false flag, hacking attack on the banking system where they go, oh, we got to change this. Everybody's, to protect you is always to protect you and the children. But something coming in May, and it's got to be in May, early summer, because they have to get ready for the upcoming election, which, if you haven't noticed, is not going the way of the bankers, the typical control they have over the election, where they pick the candidates on both sides, one of them wins, one of them loses, and everybody is in the same party. That's not happening anymore. And the fact that Biden is an actor, the guy that they keep popping up here, now they got a new actor for Biden, a new guy, and but the real Biden, will the real Joe Biden please stand up? Well, he probably can't. He's probably in a basement someplace with a drool bucket, and like I say, with his wife holding his hand. But the guy you see out there in the public is ain't Joe Biden, I can tell you that. And that's one of the main reasons when I went back and I looked at my webpage that got royally hacked back in around October, and it's finally getting back to being rebuilt right now. With all the shows are, by the way, all the archive shows are back again, and we have a very good, much, much more robust backup plan now. They went in and surgically removed many of my shows, leaving other ones, and did things. Well, I won't go into all the details of what they did, but they surgically worked on my webpage. And the one thing that I found in common with all of these shows that were surgically removed as I talked about Joe Biden not being Joe Biden. And I'm one of the few people, so I still get these emails. People are ranting and raving about all kinds of stuff and the Joe Biden and the Biden administration. Hey, there hasn't been a Joe Biden for years. Trump debated an actor with a teleprompter. I mean, how does this work? That was the main theme on my the shows that got hacked out of my web page. So clearly it's not a topic that anybody wants to talk about. And you go to any of the major news media, even Tucker Carlson talks about Biden and the Biden administration. There is no such thing. It's being run by corporate America, by the CIA, and by the banking system. An actor that's up there, you could put Howdy Doody, some wooden head puppet up there, and that's what you have today. Now, it's not like Joe Biden is sitting there making decisions that, no, not at all. There are people running the United States, and people like Obama are in have their hands thick in it because he's a worker bee. If you see their names, if you see their faces, they're not at the top. They are worker bees. They're getting their earthly benefit and royalties, you might want to call them, and their lifestyle because of being an actor in this play. Hunter Biden is an actor in the play. He's running interference for all the other kids of all these other senators and congressmen, etc., who are out there. And the kids of the elite families in California who operate the venture capital groups that fund the all of the military programs, etc., or the military industrial complex, as it is called. Hunter Biden is running interference for all of these, and he's living in a billion-dollar estate down in Florida with his servants handing him food and probably all the cocaine and chicks he wants. This is the state of the union right now. Anyway, okay, enough of that. But even Tucker Carlson doesn't realize, or if he does, he doesn't talk about it. The real news, I don't see anybody even coming close to giving real news, although I think it was very important for somebody to go and talk to Putin and let Putin air out in the Western media. Okay, so anyway, yeah, but useful idiot? No. The Hillary Clinton is the useful idiot. in the best sense of the word. Okay, a quick announcement here, and this is because I had a sale, and this was for previous customers. This is for people who had made purchases in the past. And so I thought I would extend this out to my listening audience. And this was a Valentine's Day sale, which was, of course, yesterday. The idea was that the people who had purchased in the past would get a benefit, a coupon code to use to get a very healthy percentage off on the water filter products. And so I'm extending that to my listening audience right now, the people that are out there. And this will last until this coming Sunday. So by popular demand, people said, could you just give me a few more days? You know, I get paid Friday or whatever. Can you just wait a few more days? And so I'm extending the sale to Sunday. So that would be the 16th, 17th, 18th. What's that? The 18th is Sunday night. And so I'll extend this sale. And the coupon code is VALEN. Just those five letters, short for Valentine's, but VALEN. And you get a 30% discount. Now, this is primarily for the MR5. The other catch to this is that the purchase has to be over $400. So, and people are getting creative. They're buying two 10-packs of filter elements, for example, the gravity filter elements. And some people are stocking up on the replacement filter elements for the MR5 if they've already purchased that. Or if you do not have the MR5 whole house water filter yet, it's typically priced at $19.80. The actual price is $23.80. And so there's been a special on for a while. It's like $19.80, so that's $400 off. But you get another 30% off of that, which brings it down to $13.86 is the actual amount. And that more than pays for your plumber to come over and install it and everything by getting that discount. And so go to the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com, use the coupon code VALEN, V-A-L-E-N, and get that additional 30% discount. And like I say, for orders over $400, so no matter how you package it, the order together, as long as it's over $400, you get that discount. So once again, the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. And there are some associated other webpages there. You can use that coupon also. Those will be extended. So anyway, it's just a way for you to get that clean water in your house. And this week, by the way, a little announcement here. The public is becoming far more aware of PFAS chemicals, and these things are everywhere. They're everywhere, and I have a NSF certified PFAS filter that I'm now initiating once again on the webpage. We had an order that took all of our stock up until early March, and so we're starting to take orders again with the caveat that equipment will take until about mid-March before we can start filling the orders again. So if you order right now, you can get in line, so to speak. And at that point, we will have, usually with the PFAS filters, the MR5s, all the other filter products, we have in stock. We have them there in the warehouse ready to ship. But the PFAS filter is a little bit different, and it's not a solitary filter. It's not something you use by itself. It's only for PFAS chemicals, but if you're very worried about that, then I suggest getting this. And by the way, the PFAS chemicals are very harmful, especially to pregnant women, young children, nursing mothers, elderly people, which is... And today, a lot of us. Anyway, those will be also there. And they are used in conjunction with the MR5. So anyway, go to the webpage and all of the information there. I'm not going to go through a lot of detail on his radio show, but once again, go to the webpage jmccwaterfilters.com and use the coupon code VALEN, V-A-L-E-N, the first five letters of the word Valentine, and get that extra 30% discount. Now is the time to get these because this sale will not come back again. This is just a special offer and for this Valentine's Day. And the prices are going to go back up because, well, a lot of business reasons. But anyway, I forgot to mention, I was talking about the MR5 being 1980. It's the best deal. I want to clarify that. When you go to the webpage, the best deal when you're looking at the MR5 whole house water filter ordering page, the best deal includes the MR5 whole house water filter, the UV sterilizer, which is another complete 36-inch stainless steel housing, and then an extra pack of filter elements. That's the best deal. And so, like I say, normally $23.80, that's the normal price on sale for $19.80, but you get another 30% off of that, which brings it down to $13.86, just an absolutely insanely good price. Okay, so that's enough of that, but just go to the webpage, all the explanations, there's frequently asked questions, people call for questions, if you have any final questions before ordering, etc. And then pass this off to your friends. If you have friends that are interested in clean water, tell them about this because the sale ends Sunday, the 18th at midnight. Okay, so on to this next topic. Very interesting. Just a quick snippet here. They have done ice core sampling now in Antarctica, and this is they've been doing this for a long time. And the results always come out to support standard science. But this study finally is admitting that there was a very great warming of the Antarctic ice sheet at the end of the last ice age. In other words, there was an immense ice sheet at the during the last ice age, and then all of the glaciers. So where did all this water come from? Well, the real situation is that we passed through the tail of a large comet, and that blocked the sunlight for a period of probably about a month. And this probably very well could be associated with the Noah's Flood also. And so, unfortunately, geologists and atmospheric scientists and anthropologists and archaeologists have not studied it from this point of view. It's starting to become obvious, but then you get people that come in and say, oh, everything happened 11,000 years ago at the end of the Younger Dryas period. No, there were major, major earth catastrophes probably around 1500 BC, about 3,500 years ago. That's the Velikovsky story. I talk about that on my CD. The Physics of Planet X and Ancient Celestial Disasters. I talk about these events, the Noah's event, the Moses event, which is the Venus event, which is totally different. And then there were ice ages. There were periods where there was vast increase in ice on the ice caps, etc. But the point of this study, which was announced on February 12th, just a couple of days ago, in the general news media, is that the ice core provides the first documentation of rapid Antarctic ice loss in ancient times, historical times. But the point is that, hey, there were no people driving their SUVs up and down the road back then. So where did all of this amazing warmth come from? There was no change in CO2 content. And so this happens naturally, and I've always pointed out that people say, well, why is the Earth warming up? We're getting back to normal after an ice age, buddy. That's what's going on. It's not due to you driving your SUV up and down the road. And people go, oh, well, you're against cleaning up and stopping using fossil fuels. No, I'm not. But don't give me a false answer to try and solve a problem that should have never occurred in the first place, burning of oil and coal, etc. When we had wind energy abundant, and anyway, I'm not going to go into all of that, but the important point is that the ice core data clearly shows periods when there was a tremendous loss in ice caps, ice volume, and it had nothing to do with global warming or greenhouse gases, but of course they always twist it to include that. Today, by the way, there was a, and I don't have the scientific results yet of the, I talked about this last week at a little extended conversation about Intuitive Machines. That's an Israeli company. And as far as I'm aware, this thing had a landing on the moon today. So we're going to see some pictures of the lunar surface, hopefully from an independent third-party source. And we already did see the lunar surface, the real lunar surface, not the Apollo footage lunar surface pretend in a warehouse down the American Southwest footage. No, we're going to have some real footage. And we had a lander land on the moon a couple of weeks ago and showed the real lunar surface. And of course, it's covered with dust, volcanic dust. And other dust that's been gathered by the moon, because the moon is acting as a comet discharging the solar capacitor. And so, like a comet nucleus, it's covered with dust. But underneath that are these cinder rocks that were blown out of cinder cone volcanoes on the moon, you know, and throughout history, because the moon has no atmosphere, nothing has changed. But the point is that it's really, really rough, and it's not something that you're going to drive a dune buggy around on. So we've gotten fake photos and fake footage of the moon where they have this kind of carpet-like surface with a perfect 1/4 inch layer of dust on it. That is not the moon's surface. And I've talked about this. Go back and listen to some of my recent shows where I'm talking about this situation. And of course, I call it the NASA lunar surface credibility problem, the NASA lunar surface credibility problem, that what NASA was showing in its Apollo videos was not the lunar surface. It was a created lunar surface. And they did have an idea of what it should look like, but they had to make it nice and smooth so that this lunar buggy thing could go riding around on the moon with the fake astronauts. And after I did that show, some guy wrote in, as this has been pointed out many times, that there was no spray. When you see Neil Armstrong coming down with the footage they released of Neil Armstrong coming down and guiding the lunar lander down, you see this at, right before it lands on the moon, you see this tremendous spray of dust out in all directions, and which would have, you know, been a very obvious. And when the feet come down and actually touch down on the lunar surface, you can see the dust blowing by. You can actually see one of the little feet of the lunar lander just being blown with dust and rocks that are in the pathway of this dust being blown out in all directions. And then when you get outside and you see the camera of the Apollo landers, there's none of that. And it's just like just one of those other things. And I think I've come to the conclusion that Stanley Kubrick, who did the filming in the American Southwest, probably did it at gunpoint. You know, and there was some guy there from the CIA pointing a gun at his head saying, "You do a good job, buddy." And I think he left these things in the video, and he did eventually do his movie Eyes Wide Shut to show the what he came to learn in the real world, because he was working in Hollywood, which of course is controlled by the CIA. And so the movie Eyes Wide Shut with Tom Cruise was a depiction of that secret world. And I think he did things in the footage that he made of the Apollo landings that were there to specifically tell us that they were filmed in a studio, not from the moon. So, and that's one of them. That's one of them. Some of these idiosyncrasies, some of these contradictions were there, probably put there on purpose by Kubrick. But back to the point that the lunar surface, NASA has this lunar surface credibility problem in that now when other people go back to the moon's surface is not going to be like what they were showing us. And that's a credibility problem because they lack credibility on all fronts. Okay. This is interesting. This is an interesting thing because now there are organizations, international organizations, legal organizations like the Bar Association that are meeting, and you would expect this in California, to start to fabricate legislation relative to outer space. And I jokingly, with tongue in cheek, say that they are raising the bar. There's a term. There's a term in sports, raising the bar, that refers to the high jumpers and the pole vaulters, that you raise the bar. In other words, you increase the difficulty, you raise the bar so the next guy has to jump higher. And so a bar, of course, refers to the Bar Association, which is the British Admiralty that is really running the American legal jurisprudence and legal system in which attorneys belong to, the bar, which has nothing to do with the United States. It's an English system from the old Admiralty. And so anyway, raising the bar is a tongue-in-cheek play on words, raising the Bar Association. And now to start doing influencing legislators as to the operations of outer space, putting legal boundaries on them, etc. And so once people start doing that, then the gloves are off because that's the next thing you have is warfare between China and Russia and other spacefaring nations, potentially Japan, who say, "Wait a minute, you can't pass laws about outer space because outer space belongs to everybody. You don't own outer space." And of course, then you have the one-upmanship, which only leads to bad things and wars in outer space. And anyway, I talk about this in all of my books. I talk about the survival of man, in that when man gets to the threshold of going into outer space, that's where the other shoe is going to drop, so to speak, where, anyway, read my books for the commentary on that. And so just getting back to the main science topic, I said I'm going to talk about electrical conditions in outer space. And here's something, I encourage you to read my books, but on this topic, my book that really describes this in great detail is the weather book. We use just the slang term, the weather book. It's the official title is Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather. And that book is just the classic book on space weather. Something that, of course, NASA and NOAA and all of the meteorologists and NASA scientists on the planet still haven't figured out even page one of that book. But in that book, I describe what I call local electrical batteries, LEBs. And so, if you don't believe in electric fields in outer space, if you don't understand where magnetic fields come from, then how can you imagine anything going on in outer space? To them, it's just like you get out of Earth's atmosphere and it's just empty space with a couple magnetic fields hanging around. Well, let me explain something. In the plasma environment of outer space, magnetic fields just don't simply exist. And if they did, they would be very short-lived, because they only can be formed by electrical currents. That's the only way to form a magnetic field in the plasma environment of outer space. So you can talk about magnetic fields or magnetic reconnection or anything else you want to talk about, but none of it makes any sense unless you understand the source of those magnetic fields in the plasma environment of outer space. And I do understand those things. So anyway, there are 17 electrical batteries. These are plasma batteries around Earth, and I describe them in the book. And then I was talking to someone just the other day about my work on propulsion systems. So I've designed two different One is an active propulsion system in which things, it's not an inertial propulsion system. And then I have an inactive propulsion system where there are no moving parts. And it's a very interesting, but that one I've not released to the public. The first one, you can actually see the IEEE publication in my Atlantis to Tesla book. It's actually reprinted there. So the point that I was making was that you would not design electromagnetic propulsion systems for outer space if you didn't understand the local electrical batteries. And so that's why in the 1980s, I spent a lot of my time going around to giving presentations to military, closed military meetings, to places like Airspace America Air Show in San Diego, to quite a few other places, private meetings, regarding my electromagnetic propulsion systems, which one of them was eventually stolen by some venture capital groups in Los Angeles and fed into the military, the large aerospace corporations out there, where they proceeded to develop them. One of them I did not release, and that one is still, I'm holding that one, that particular card, on very close to my chest, let's put it that way. And they've been unable to get that information from me, the second design of the passive electromagnetic propulsion system. But you wouldn't design these if you didn't understand that there were the local electrical batteries and the discharge of these batteries in outer space and how to control them to gain propulsion. So at any rate, I'll try and spend a little more time next week on this particular topic. And just in the last couple seconds here, I want to remind you, go to my webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. Use the coupon code VALEN, VALEN, for 30% additional discount. And all of the information there, and give it to your friends. If you have some friends that are looking for water filter products, give that to them, because this sale will end Sunday night at midnight Sunday night. And the coupon code, once again, VALEN, VALEN, for an additional 30% discount on some of the already discounted prices. And the flagship product, of course, on the web page is the MR5 whole house water filter. So very great prices, which will not come back again, I guarantee you that. So once again, the web page, jmccwaterfilters.com, coupon code VALEN, VALEN. And we will talk to you next week. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.